Reading from the second chapter of Esther. Esther made queen. Later, when the anger of King Xerxes had subsided, he remembered Vashti and what she had done and what he had decreed about her. Then the king's personal attendants proposed, "Let a search be made for beautiful young virgins for the king. Let the king appoint commissioners in every province of his realm to bring these beautiful girls into the harem at the citadel of Susa. Let them be placed under the care of Egai, the king's eunuch, who is in charge of the women, and let beauty treatments be given to them. Let the girl who pleases the king be queen instead of Vashti." This advice appealed to the king, and he followed it. Now there was in the citadel of Susa a Jew of the tribe of Benjamin named Mordecai, son of Jair, and son of Shemai, and the son of Kish, who had been carried into exile from Jerusalem by Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, among those taken captive by Joachim, king of Judah. Mordecai had a cousin named Adasha, whom he had brought up because she neither had father or no mother. This girl, who was also known as Esther, was lovely in form and features, and Mordecai had taken her as his own daughter when her father and mother died. When the king's order and edict had been proclaimed, many girls were brought to the citadel of Susa and under the care of Egai. Esther also was taken to the king's palace and entrusted to Egai, who had charge of the harem. The girl pleased him and won his favour. Immediately he provided her with beauty treatments and special food. He assigned her 7 maids selected from the king's palace and moved her and her maids into the best place in the harem. Esther had not revealed her nationality and family background because Mordecai had forbidden her to do so. Every day he walked to and fro near the courtyard of the harem to find out how Esther was and what was happening to her. Before a girl's turn came to go into King Xerxes, she had to complete 12 months of beauty treatments prescribed for the women, 6 months of oil of myrrh, and 6 with perfumes and cosmetics. And this is how she would go to the king. Anything she wanted was given to her to take with her from the harem to the king's palace. And in the evening she would go there, and in the morning return to another part of the harem in the care of Shagaza, the king's eunuch, who was in charge of the concubines. She would not return to the king unless he was pleased with her and summoned her by name. And then the turn came for Esther, the girl Mordecai had adopted, and the daughter of his uncle Abihail, to go to the king. And she asked for nothing other than what Agai, the king's eunuch, who was in charge of the harem, suggested. And Esther won favour of everyone who saw her, and she was taken to King Xerxes in the royal residence in the 10th month, the month of Tebeth, in the 7th year of his reign. And now the king was attracted to Esther more than any of the other women, and she won favour and approval more than any of the virgins. So he set a royal crown on her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. And the king gave a great banquet. Esther's banquet for all his nobles and officials, he proclaimed a holiday throughout the provinces and distributed gifts with royal liberality. Mordecai uncovers a conspiracy. When the virgins were assembled a second time, Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate. But Esther had kept secret her family background and nationality, just as Mordecai had told her to do. for she continued to follow Mordecai's instructions, as she had done when he was bringing her up. During the time, Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate. Bigthanah and Teresh, two of the king's officers who guarded the doorway, became angry and conspired to assassinate King Xerxes. But Mordecai found out about the plot and told Queen Esther, who in turn reported it to the king, giving credit to Mordecai. And when the report was investigated and found to be true, the two officials were hanged at the gallows. All this was recorded in the Book of Annals, in the presence of the king. May God add his blessing to this reading from his holy word. Amen.
Before we examine Esther chapter 2, it's worth just recalling what happened in the previous chapter, which we examined last Sunday evening. It begins with the king of Persia calling a very lavish party, the queen involving herself in a fairly petty rebellion, a drunken king responding to that rebellion in his wrath, and a sovereign God's plan beginning to unfold. And so we come to the second chapter of the book of Esther. We did look briefly at the first few verses last time, but we shall go over them briefly again. In chapter 2, verses 1 to 4, we're told that King Ahasuerus, his wrath subsided. I ought to give some kind of explanation here. Ahasuerus is his Hebrew name. Xerxes is his Greek name. And because he's better known by the Greek name, some translations go with that name. The New King James Version sticks with the Hebrew. So in case you're wondering, there are not two kings. There is one king, but he has several names. In the same way that Esther, her real name is Hadassah. It depends on the language which is being used. So the king, his wrath subsides. Isn't there some practical advice in the Bible about anger? It's not wrong to get anger, to become angry. Indeed, if nothing ever made you angry, you've obviously not seen what goes on in our world. But the Bible says, in your anger, do not sin. And Ahasuerus banished the queen while he was very angry, and while he was drunk, which is always a terrible combination. And the following morning or afternoon, he says he remembered Vashti and what she had done and what had been decreed against her. There's an element of regret there. And of course, the laws of the Persians are such that once a law is made, it can never be repealed. He cannot see this woman ever again. And so his servants decide to cheer him once more. This man is easily cheered by having a kind of nationwide beauty contest, and he gets to pick his queen. And it says in verse 4, the thing pleased the king, and he did so. And there's no doubt here that in ancient Persia, as recorded in the book of Esther, women are pretty much seen as pawns in a man's world. They are very much treated like objects. In verse 5, though, the story goes to Shushan, again in some translations Susa. Susa is a Greek name, Shushan is the Hebrew. It says there was a certain Jew whose name was Mordecai, the son of Jair, the son of Shimei, the son of Kish, a Benjamite. And he is evidently looking after his cousin, his uncle's daughter. And it says that she was lovely, but she was an orphan. And I ended last Sunday evening by saying how so far Esther's lot in life has been rather poor. She's lost her mother, she's lost her father. And now she is being caught up, perhaps against her will, in the machinations of the Persian court. Her name means myrtle, she is, as well as star, she is a lovely flower. but she is now likely to be picked and almost certainly discarded. So we come to verse 8. So it was when the king's command and decree were heard, and when many young women were gathered at Shushan the citadel, under the custody of Hegai, that Esther also was taken to the king's palace, into the care of Hegai, the custodian of the women. Now the young woman pleased him, and she obtained his favour. So far, Esther's life has been pretty bad, but there is a glimmer now of hope. She is taken to the palace and put in charge of a royal official called Hegai, a eunuch, and she finds favour. The question is, why does she find favour with Hegai? Is it because she's rather beautiful? I'm sure beautiful people in the world probably get on more than people who are not deemed beautiful. Perhaps they get the jobs, or they get the partners, or they get this, that, and the other. Well, we're told that Esther was beautiful. Maybe her beauty impressed him. Let's recall, though, that there are possibly hundreds or thousands of other beautiful women who are under his custody. Although the Bible singles her out for her beauty, it's not suggesting that the other women were somehow lacking. He was, of course, a eunuch. He cannot have any biological regard for women, so it cannot be because of that. It's because of God's providence that he offered her his favour. Now, I made the point last week that the book of Esther is an unusual book because God is not even mentioned. And yet his providence, his divine plan, his overarching scheme, that is being unfolded and fulfilled, even by pagan kings, is present in every line, in every chapter, in every verse. And God so ordained that this man, who's seen many a pretty woman come and go before, should find this one particularly attractive. Perhaps not physically, perhaps because of her character, perhaps God himself simply said, "Isn't this young Myrtle lovely?" We're told he readily gave her beauty preparations to her, besides her allowance. Then 7 choice maidservants were provided for her from the king's palace, and he moved her and her maidservants to the best place in the house of the women. The question I asked here is, does she need these extra beauty preparations? The Bible makes it clear earlier on that she was lovely and beautiful without all the makeup and the preparations of the court of Persia. She does not need these adornments, and yet, by the standards of their day, they were given to her anyway in more proportion than anyone else. Now, let it not be said that later on in the chapter the king preferred Esther because she was wearing more Persian oil or more Persian perfume than any of the other women. I'm very much sure that made no difference whatsoever. Notice also that she who began the chapter with nothing except a kindly relative is now in her own apartment in the royal palace with the 7 women to look after her. God does sometimes bless his people with material blessing, but usually only when he knows that such will not corrupt their spirits. And Esther is not to be corrupted by it. We're told in verse 10 something that's quite strange. Esther had not revealed her people or family, for Mordecai had charged her not to reveal it. Now, contrast that with Daniel, who was also living at a fairly similar time, who makes no secret of his Judaism and his Jewishness. Esther, however, keeps her family background a secret, and that is because Mordecai has thus instructed her. The question is why? Well, there is a hint, I think, in the book of Ezra. Now, one of the reasons I chose to look at the book of Esther is that there's a little bit of carry-on from Nehemiah. It was written around a similar time. It's set slightly earlier, but it might be that Nehemiah is in fact the author, and Ezra was a contemporary thereof. Now in Ezra chapter 4 verse 6 we read, "In the reign of King Ahasuerus," this is the king, In the beginning of his reign, this is the beginning of his reign, they wrote an accusation against the inhabitants of Judah and Jerusalem. The they are the enemies of the Jewish people. And they write a letter to King Xerxes saying, those Jews are a rebellious people. They're rebuilding Jerusalem, they're rebuilding the temple, they're wanting to rebuild the walls. You need to inquire very carefully into these people because they are rebellious. Now, if that has just happened, Mordecai is conscious, perhaps, that the Jewishness of Esther is not likely to help her case, and therefore he instructs her to be quiet. Now, I would suggest that the sovereign God is able to overrule that whatever. Nevertheless, Mordecai has instructed her, and she obeys. It might also be, in the following chapter, we were introduced to a man called Haman, who was definitively anti-Semitic, and it might be that his rise up the greasy pole has already begun to happen. And therefore, Mordecai, perhaps wisely, says to Esther, do not advertise the fact that you are a Jew. It will not help you. It will not help us. Have you noticed that so many times throughout history there has been anti-Semitism? That is the hatred of Jews and Jewishness. It's happened in all manner of countries. It's been present in our nation. I think there were anti-Semitic riots in Wales in the 1920s. In the 1290s, many Jews died horribly in York, and that's to say nothing of what happened in Russia and in Germany. Satan, of course, has had a real hatred of the Jewish people. They are the race through whom Messiah would come. If God is also working in the background of the book of Esther, so is he who was a murderer from the beginning. Another reason, perhaps, why Esther keeps quiet is that it adds a wonderful dramatic effect later on in the story. The fact that Esther reveals, I am a Jew, when Haman is about to try and kill all the Jews, surely is one of God's master strokes in ensuring his people's survival. Let's also, though, note, before we move on, that chapter 1 was an example of when King Xerxes, the most powerful man in the world, and can I say, by the way, that almost certainly 48% of the world's population at that time was part of his empire. Wow. The most powerful man in the world, and his wife will not do as he asks. Yet here is Mordecai, a man who asks Esther to do something, and she complies. That shows a real humility in her spirit, but also something about him. Why is it that Esther loves and respects Mordecai far more than Vashti did her husband? Well, the answer is found in the following verse, verse 11. Every day Mordecai paced in front of the court of the women's quarters to learn of Esther's welfare and what was happening to her. They may only have been cousins, but Mordecai's love for Esther is more than just some kind of familial responsibility. Well, no one else could look after her, so I suppose I ought to have taken her in. There is a real love between this older man and his younger female relative, and we're told he is pacing up and down in the hope of hearing some news about her to ensure her welfare and her well-being. Because of his love for her, she obeys his commands. Of course, he himself is not allowed entry into the women's quarters. He is kept outside, excuse me. She has no father to take care of her, and therefore he feels all the more constrained to inquire as to her health and her well-being. Notice also she's still described in these very kind of passive terms. What was happening to her? She's certainly not in control of the situation. She is at the whim of others.
And sometimes in life, when we feel out of control, when we feel as though we are currently subject to everything going on around us, when perhaps like a piece of orange peel cast into a river for some geography field work, it's bobbing up and down and going wherever the current takes it, that is sometimes how our lives appear. We must remind ourselves that although we are not in control, our God is. We don't read much about the personal faith of Esther in this book. I'm sure she had a personal faith, otherwise the Holy Spirit would not have allowed this book to have been written and included in the canon. But if she is feeling, yet again, I have no say in anything that happens to me, surely she knew that God is still on the throne. Verse 12, each young woman's turn came to go in to King Ahasuerus after she had completed 12 months' preparation, according to the regulations for the women. For thus were the days of their preparation apportioned, 6 months with oil of myrrh, 6 months with perfumes and preparations for beautifying women. Now, I'm no expert on the beautification of women, but I did do some research. And I can tell you that at Preston's Marriott Hotel this June, you can, for 30 minutes, have a Declior Discovery Facial at a cost of £35. If you're feeling more extravagant, you can buy 75 minutes of a Declior Collagen Plump and Lift for £56. Ultimately, effective anti-aging facial, leaving the skin plumper and firmer. Goodness me, let's book our tickets straight away. Such things, I'm afraid, don't appeal to me. Perhaps you'll be off to book your day, I don't know. But if it costs £35 for 30 minutes, quite clearly, even in our day and age, these things are not cheap. Esther has 12 months of this stuff. Now, it might be that she loved every minute of it. I can't think of anything worse. 6 months with oil of myrrh, what does that mean? Massages, presumably, okay, maybe it's not too bad. Lots of perfume. Walking through Boots makes me want to sneeze. She has 6 months of being in that kind of environment. There's no doubt that Xerxes is not sparing any expense whatsoever when it comes to making already beautiful women more beautiful. Thus prepared, each young woman went to the king, and she was given whatever she desired to take with her from the women's quarters to the king's palace. In the evening she went, and in the morning she returned. There's something incredibly seedy about that. Xerxes has his evening of pleasure, and then in the morning, off they go, and almost certainly he never sees them again. And they will be confined thereafter to the women's quarters, to the harem, where they probably do live a life of luxury, but a very boring, a very idle life. These women might be beautiful, but their lives are cheap. Doubtless it was better than perhaps to be begging on the streets. And these women could apparently take in some kind of objects to impress the king. They could take in whatever they wanted. But they then returned to the second house of the women, to the custody of Shazgaz, the king's eunuch who kept the concubines. She would not go into the king again unless the king delighted in her and called for her by name. The second house is the house of the concubines. These are, a concubine is almost like a wife, but with even fewer rights. So that these women are not queens. They are perhaps slightly better off than those women who've never yet been sampled. But again, it's not a great prospect for Esther. She must know that perhaps one of her friends, her colleagues, is going in tonight, and she will then become a concubine, and that will be the end of it. But notice also that by and large, the king never even bothers to learn their names. He's not interested in them as women. He wants his pleasure. Verse 15, those first few words must have sent a shudder. Now, when the turn came for Esther, she knows her turn is coming. She has her night of intimacy with the king, and she will, if probability is anything to go by, she will also be discarded like all the other girls. Esther, the daughter of Abihail, the uncle of Mordecai, who had taken her as his daughter to go into the king, she requested nothing but what Hegai, the king's eunuch, the custodian of the women, advised. What would she have taken with her? Well, she makes no demands. I want a nice gold necklace or some pearl earrings because that will make me look good. She rather defers to this man Hegai, whom the Lord had moved to show her favour. Again, what does that tell us about Esther? This is the one time in the book of Esther where she is actually given a say on anything whatsoever. She is allowed to take something in to the king's bedroom with her, and on this one occasion, she defers to the wisdom of others. And maybe Hegai knew what was the king's favourite flower or his favourite perfume. Many women, perhaps at this point, would have become proud and overbearing. Not Esther. Esther is never one to be too great to take advice from others, nor to defer to their wisdom. Esther obtained favour in the sight of all who saw her. So Esther was taken to King Ahasuerus into his royal palace in the 10th month, which is the month of Tebeth, in the 7th year of his reign. Let's just examine the chronology for a moment. In the 7th year of his reign, chapter 1 was in the 3rd year of his reign. Vashti has now been gone for 4 years. Margaret gave our reading before, and it was a long reading, I appreciate that. But it might have taken a few minutes. What we read there was 4 years' worth of chronology. It's not looking good for Esther, is it? The king's looking for a new queen, and 4 years on, it comes to her turn. That's not looking promising. What about the month of Tebeth? Tebeth means the wet and cold month. I think it literally means raining. When you're selling a house, I know I've used this illustration before, but always take the picture for the estate agent's website on a sunny day. It has been proven that if you take a picture of your house with a lovely blue sky and the sunshine on it, it looks far more attractive than in the rain or with a great grey cloud over it. Esther is going into the king 4 years into this search for a new queen. He's seen them all. Surely she's thinking he's found better women than me. It's miserable outside. The king is probably not in a good mood. Maybe Esther was thinking, well, you know, if God is in control, if this is from God, surely he would have done it by now. I've been waiting for, well, I've had 1 year's worth of treatments. I've had 3 years of hanging around. Do you ever pray for things and you give God your timeline, you give him a deadline, and he lets it slip by? What does Peter say? Do not forget this one thing, dear friends. With the Lord, a day is like 1,000 years. 1,000 years are like a day. The Lord is not slow in keeping his promises, as some understand slowness. He is patient with you, not wanting anyone to perish, but everyone to come to repentance. God is not slow. God will do what he will do in his own timing, not in yours. And sometimes we pray for things and the deadline comes and the deadline goes, but God is still in control. And sometimes the Lord will appoint such as Esther to become queen of Persia, but he won't do it the day after Vashti leaves. He'll wait 4 years. I don't know why God sometimes appears to tarry, but I do know that he knows what he's doing. And his understanding is far greater than mine. Indeed, as the heavens are above the earth, so his ways are above mine. Who am I to tell God when he ought to act? So, she's been waiting 4 years. There's been an awful lot of women who have gone in before her. Assuming he has one per night, we're looking at rather a lot. It's miserable and cold and wet outside. But I say, can our God not overrule? Verse 17, the king loved Esther more than all the other women. Was it because of the extra perfume?
No.
Was it because he'd had enough of looking? No, I think he rather enjoyed the search. She obtained grace and favour in his sight more than all the virgins, so he set the royal crown upon her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. Here, Xerxes is acting as viceroy for the God of heaven. It's God who put the crown upon her head. It's God who bestowed grace and favour upon her. Xerxes now, who thinks he's the most powerful man in the world, is merely but an instrument of the real King of Kings. The king then made a great feast, the Feast of Esther, for all his officials and servants, and he proclaimed a holiday in the provinces and gave gifts according to the generosity of a king. Here now the entire population has reason to love Queen Esther. They're given a holiday, perhaps time off work, perhaps remission of tax, perhaps a break from military service. And the book could end quite conveniently at the end of verse 18. And it would still be a great biblical book. Here is a girl who came from nowhere, who became Queen of Persia because our God is in control. It would be a lovely fairy story, a happy ending. But God does not raise people into positions of responsibility and influence for their own sake. If God has given you some ability or talent, or some position, or some influence among others, it is that you might serve him better and others in so doing. You see, in verse 19, we find one of the reasons why Esther has been appointed Queen of Persia. It's not just a rags-to-riches story, so we all go away and feel good about ourselves when our lives aren't going anywhere. When the virgins were gathered together a second time, Mordecai sat within the king's gate. So Xerxes has chosen his queen, but he's still quite the player. He wishes to have yet to add more concubines to his second house, and so he has a second round. While that's taking place, we're told Mordecai sat within the king's gate. Now, the king's gate was often used as the local law court in the ancient Near East, and it might be that Mordecai, through the good ministrations of Esther, has been appointed to join the judiciary. I suggested last week that he was either a soldier, because Marduk, after whom he was named, was a war god, or he was an accountant. We know there was an accountant in Susa checking on the canals at this time called Mordecai. Either way, he's sitting within the king's gate, possibly gaining some kind of promotion. And it might be that Esther was pulling the strings. Verse 20, now Esther had not revealed to her family and to her people, just as Mordecai had charged her, for Esther obeyed the command of Mordecai as when she was brought up by him. Now we know that already. When the Bible tells us something twice, we must always ask why. It's not because the writer thinks you're forgetful. It's because a point is being made. Why mention it again now? Well, verse 20 is telling us something about the character of Esther. We know that she obeyed Mordecai, her cousin, who was really like a stepfather. She obeyed him when she was weak and powerless. Now she is the most powerful woman in the world. and she still obeys him. There is such humility in the Queen of Persia that she continues to obey and have regard for and loyalty towards Mordecai. Now, she might have had a conversation, said, "Look, Mordecai, I appreciate I'm meant to obey you, but with respect, you're an accountant and I'm the queen. So really, you need to start doing what I say now." There's none of that. She continues with that humility. She may no longer be beholden to him, but the bonds of love and faith are so strong that their loving relationship continues. Vashti perhaps allowed her pride to destroy her and end her time as queen. Not so with Esther. There is a contrast here between these two women. In those days, while Mordecai sat within the king's gate, two of the king's eunuchs, Bigthan and Teresh, doorkeepers, became furious and sought to lay hands on King Ahasuerus. Bigthan, maybe the Bigtha referred to in chapter 1, we don't know. Why are they furious? Some have suggested they were close to Queen Vashti. I'm not sure about that. That was 4 years ago. To become furious 4 years after the event seems a rather delayed reaction. It might be that this king is rather selfish, and he is. He's selfish when he came to the regarding Queen Vashti. He was selfish when he got all these women assembled so he could take his pick. He's selfish even in what he does with Mordecai at the end of this chapter. He is a selfish man. That's what ancient kings were like. And it might be that they feel he hasn't sufficiently rewarded them. We don't know why they are furious, but they are. They're so furious they want to lay hands on him. That doesn't mean shake him by the hand. That means throttle him round the neck. Yep. Sometimes those in power conduct themselves poorly. But our response is not to lay hands on them. Sin always finds us out. Verse 22, the matter became known to Mordecai. Perhaps sitting at the gate, he hears tidbits of gossip. He used to pace up and down trying to find out information about Esther. Now he hears things coming to him. Or maybe at the king's gate, he has a position of authority. He has spies and informants. I don't know. But he finds out. He tells Queen Esther in verse 22, and Esther informed the king in Mordecai's name. When an inquiry was made into the matter, these men are put on trial. It was confirmed, and both were hanged on a gallows. And it was written in the book of Chronicles in the presence of the king. These men tried to kill a king, and they pay for it with their own lives. Esther, quite clearly, is more than just a pretty face. She has just saved her husband's life. And let me tell you what happens in ancient Persia when you kill a king. Invariably, a civil war happens. Now, Xerxes actually was killed in the end by his bodyguards, but several years further on. A number of kings of Persia, both before Xerxes and after, were murdered. You see, when you invest power and authority in just one person, you've only one person to kill if you want to change your government. That's the weakness of absolute monarchy. The fact is, Esther has saved her husband's life and probably saved the lives of many thousands more throughout the empire. And we're told that the event was recorded. It might be that the king was quite grateful to his wife, although it would seem that nothing is given to Mordecai. Now, I said before that the book could have ended at the end of verse 18, and we would have been glad. The book might also have ended at the end of verse 23, and we'd be even more glad, because herein we see the reason that God appointed Esther queen. Well, in fact, the book continues, because although God has used Esther, there is more work to be done. And I hope you can look back at your lives and say, I know why that happened now. I know why I was brought here. I know why that circumstance happened, because God allowed me to do this and do that and to give glory to him. Well, Esther's work is not finished. And the fact that you are still here means neither. is yours. I look forward to continuing the book of Esther.